Rediscover your passion and begin building a strong, vibrant, and happier life to get you from where you are to the life you were born to live. From Wall Street to Main Street, we bring it all right here inside of Energy Bar. Is porn addiction our next health crisis? Are we keeping our heads in the sand, hoping that someone else will deal with the problem, will manage our society when it comes to pornography? Has the internet played a role in predators being able to grow in numbers? The statistics are troubling for sure. When we think of so many people who are exposed, and our young children are exposed to pornography at very young ages, and parents are not putting enough boundaries in place, there is a cry for parenting. Our children need structure. The subject that we are going to approach today is a very dark subject, and we're bringing light on this subject right here on the Energy Bar. As I introduce you to a recovering porn addict who has gone through legal jeopardy, emotional and mental jeopardy, to come to the point that he's been empowered enough to write a book titled The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About. Well, we'll talk about it, and we will continue to talk about it. Joshua Shea, a porn addict, introduced to pornography in his infancy, really, and who was placed in the care of a woman who was exposing him and other children to pornography while his Catholic parents were teaching morality and ethics. She was teaching pornography. So I want you to listen today. Share this with your friends right now, because this is going to be a jaw-dropping, eye-opening broadcast today, right here on the Energy Bar. Share it with your friends right now across social media as we go into the room with Joshua Shea, the recovering porn addict, arrested by the police because he was caught in the act of being a predator, today on the Energy Bar. Did I get all of that right, Joshua?
Everything right. You get my publisher's website. The website that I operate is called recoveringpornaddict.com.
So I want us to begin this journey today, and you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you became so passionate about this subject.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my name is Joshua Shea. I live in Central Maine. I have had both a pornography addiction and struggle with alcoholism going back to my teenage years. And I kind of hid those by being an overachiever my entire life. I ended up rising to the point where 5, 6, 7 years ago, I had created one of the largest magazines in Maine. I was a creator of one of Maine's largest film festivals, and I was also a local politician serving on my city council. And what nobody realized was that I was actually suffering with these addictions. And when my businesses started to head south, when my relationships with my family started to head a little bit south, I tried to save myself and fix everything by pulling myself off of my mental health medication that I take for bipolar disorder. I thought that I could tap into my manic side. That was a big mistake. What happened was that the pornography use and the alcoholism just exploded and escalated, leading to me eventually going online, talking to women in chat rooms in the middle of the night, encouraging them to do different sexual things. That all came to a head one day in early 2014. When the Maine State Police showed up at my door and said that one of those women that I talked to online was a teenager.
And wow.
That was a tremendous wake-up call, and not just a wake-up call, but it was the intervention that I needed. I my life changed in a blink of an eye. Within 2 hours of them showing up at my door, I had been booked into the county jail and bailed out by my wife. There was already TV news cameras and news vans in front of my house. My life changed overnight. But while it was a shock at the time, I can now look back 4 years later, and I've just passed my 4-year sobriety point with both porn and alcohol, and see what a complete blessing it was, because it forced me to go get the kind of professional help that I needed, and it allowed me to start focusing on myself for the first time in my life and really focusing on why I was the way I was. As I learned about porn addiction and really learned about how there were just so few resources, I decided that I needed to become a voice in this and start letting people know just how serious porn addiction is. So in the six months that I was in jail, I wrote my book that's called The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About, How I Let My Pornography Addiction Hurt People and Destroy Relationships.
How long were you addicted to porn? When did it start?
Well, like most true addicts, they can tell you that the first time they were exposed, they knew. And I can tell you when I was 11 or 12 years old and my older cousin showed me a bunch of Penthouse magazines in the mid-80s that I was hooked immediately. It really does remind me of the first time that I ever got drunk a couple years later. It's just this sense of, oh my God, I have found something here. Mm-hmm, I have found something that's going to help me cope with life.
Right.
It feels good. It's soothing. Mm-hmm. It was the first time, you know, 12, 13 years old.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. How old were you and how old was your older cousin?
My older cousin, I think he was 2 or 3 years older.
Okay.
He wasn't a lot older, but he was at a camp, and he found these magazines at this camp he had, or his dad had, and shared them with me. And it was just, I had a visceral reaction unlike anything I'd had toward anything at that point.
So at the age of 12 or 13, you were exposed to pornography through magazines.
Yes.
And I want parents to hear this. I want people to hear this because the Energy Bar is about bringing awareness and to ignite the passion to change. We want people to really hear these messages. And thank God that you've written a book on it. But there's a deeper message for the world to hear even before we talk about the book. Because here you are, 12, 13 years old, you've been exposed to it. And when many parents don't really watch what their children read, and in this age of technology, what their children are watching online and are not putting parental controls in place on the internet to protect their children. So you were exposed at 12 and 13, and then through the years, and also you're saying that you were also introduced to alcohol at a young age. So here you have two addictions running together, you know, in your life. And so how old were you when you were introduced to alcohol?
I was 14 or 15 years old the first time that I was ever able to get drunk, and it was at a wedding, and the reception wasn't, I guess, as well attended as they expected, so there were empty tables where champagne had already been poured, and when nobody was looking, I would go and I'd drink a little more. And then I'd go and I'd grab another one and drink a little more, and everybody's dancing and having a good time.
No supervision.
Josh in the back drinking too much bad champagne.
So you put those two together, and what do you have, Joshua, when you put alcohol and pornography together?
Well, you have a life of hiding addictions and of hiding what you know is not the correct way to deal with your problems. Like most addicts, there was some childhood trauma that I suffered of an abusive nature. And, you know, these, while I didn't realize it at the time, were ways for me to cope with that trauma. And as I got older and as, you know, different things in life were thrown your way, these became my coping mechanisms when I had anxiety, when I had stress. you know, alcohol is one of those things you can do out in public with, you know, people and nobody really questions it. And pornography is something that I could use, you know, in the privacy of my own house, whether it was originally the magazines or videotapes, and then eventually, you know, moving over to the internet where it's become such a problem these days. But yeah, it's just another secret that you hide from everybody. Because
yeah.
You don't know how to properly process the things happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Joshua, so you were doing this to cope with internal stressors and trauma that you had faced as a child yourself. Do you mind sharing what that trauma was all about? I'm sure you covered this in your book because authors are transparent. That's what gives us the ability to write. We can open up and share these things. So what happened that you felt that you needed to have something to de-stress your life?
Well, I was, I do want to point out that none of the abuse came from my parents. It came from a caregiver that I had who I, when my parents were at work, prior to starting school, I was taken care of at a very young age during the day. Once I started school, I was there another couple of years after school, although the abuse that I recall was more, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, and it was mental, it was some physical, and it was some sexual, and it wasn't the worst abuse I've ever heard of, but there was highly inappropriate situations, and I can look back now and recognize that this woman who took care of me was very ill herself.
Mm-hmm.
She had OCDs like you wouldn't believe, even though I had no idea what that was at 4 years old. She called me by a different name. She would comb my hair roughly 20 times a day. Mm. She would vacuum her house 5-6 times a day. And with some of the other children that she took care of, there were some inappropriate situations.
So your introduction to pornography was not 12 or 13 years old. It was 4 years old.
Well, here's the thing that was, I think, the bigger problem there, because it wasn't, I had seen naked people before I saw this hardcore pornography, which, involved the actual sex act. What I think the bigger problem was when I was 4 or 5 is that at my house, I come from a very strict Catholic French upbringing, mm-hmm. which I think is, just this side of some Middle East countries when it comes to openness towards sexuality. So at home, I got this very conservative message about sexuality, very, very conservative.
Sure.
Yet at this babysitter's house, it was very liberal and wide open. Now, I didn't feel safe at the babysitter's house, yet sex was wide open and it was not a problem. I felt very safe at my house with my parents, mm-hmm. but sex was a dirty, bad thing. So mm-hmm. it was a completely conflicting story that I got from the people who were my two biggest caregivers at the time. And I think that is what really played into a lot of my attitudes towards sexuality as I got older and as I discovered true pornography and alcohol.
Thank you so much for being transparent, because I honestly believe, and I know this in my heart of hearts, the only way we can empower people is to be transparent with them and to be open and honest. Products and services that we offer, I'm an author, you're an author, so many people are authors, but at the core, people need to see that we're being transparent, that we're being open and honest, and we don't mind telling our own stories. And when you're talking about a 3 and 4 year old child in the hands of a babysitter, and I heard you, Joshua, and you said, well, she was sick herself. And no excuse. People who care for children need to care for children. And they have no business in the presence of a child if that child does not feel safe. Parents, listen to this story. I want you guys and ladies who are listening, please take to heart some of these things that Joshua is saying, because you're leaving your child in the hands of a quote unquote safe sitter, and you think it's all right. And then if they get offended because you're asking them about the care of your own child, you're asking them about what happened during the day, or why is that extra bruise on your child, or why is your child being distant at home when they were first a very outgoing and extrovert, and all of a sudden your child become that's an introvert, you need to question. You need to question what happens at the daycare. You need to question what's happening with your children. What are they being exposed to? Take some time off. Just take off early one day and drop in on the sitter. Take off early one day and drop in on the daycare. Find out what's really going on. And if you'll do these just these drive-bys, these drop-ins, ladies and gentlemen, you'll put them on alert that your eyes are open. I like the idea when there are centers that have cameras now, Joshua, where people can actually see, or you can get a babysitting camera and put it in your own home and make sure that you're keeping an eye on your child. And I understand how some mothers said, you know what, I really don't want to leave my baby, so I'm going to take off a few years. So at least until the child is able to communicate with me about who's violating your body or who's touching you inappropriately. I've had friends whose children or grandchildren have been violated in daycare centers. And these things, ladies and gentlemen, ought not to be. And we here on the Energy Bar in America Out Loud, we will expose the devil and we will lay the axe to the root of the tree. We will show you and we will teach you and tell you, empower you, and give you tools that you can use, and just give you, sometimes when you can get so busy, Joshua, we can get so busy with life that we forget about the things, those little things that are so important. And your child is important, and you must cover and protect your child. Joshua, your experience has led you into being an author and also an advocate, I'm sure, for children who are in these compromised positions. We've got to take a pause here for a moment, but we'll be back with Joshua Shea as he continues to talk to us about his history and his journey on as he became a porn addict and also had alcohol issues going on, some mental and emotional health issues that are deeply rooted in how he was raised and what he was exposed to as at a very young age. Ladies and gentlemen, children are people too. And if you turn something on, you turn on your television set and you think that it's not important, that they don't care, you think that that baby in your arms, ma'am, is unaware, you are dead wrong, because those are people that you're holding in your arms. Those are people that are in those cradles. Those are people that are in that play, those playpens, and they deserve the respect. Consider your child before you turn on that television, before you bring a magazine into your home, before you expose them to some pervert that you're dating. Consider your child. I know I sound preachy here today, but so what? It's my show. I'm Dr. Faye. I'll be back with more on the Energy Bar right after this pause.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, we're back here with porn addictions. When does it begin? How do we protect our children? I'm here with Joshua Shea today, and he is opening up a whole subject, a whole big can of worms, I guess I could say, Joshua, but it's certainly something that we need to address, and I'm very passionate about it, and I guess that comes across. But I want Joshua to continue his conversation with us today and his journey, because Joshua, here's what's happening. You and I both know that there are children who are going through what you went through. And while we have this conversation here today, we want to reach some parents somewhere that will say, wait a minute, my child has been showing some signs that something's going on in the daycare, something's going on at school, maybe it's the coach, maybe it's the teacher, I don't know who it is, but pay attention to your children. So Joshua, continue the conversation. You were talking about the babysitter, and you were talking about the alcohol intro, champagne at a wedding, a 14-year-old boy not being supervised at a wedding, and there's alcohol. So you experimented with that. And then what begins to happen to you mentally and emotionally from that point as a teenager?
Well, I think what I recognized was that when things got tough, when things got difficult and hard, and I hadn't yet been diagnosed with any of my mental health issues, so I wasn't on any medication, and I needed to find an outlet to, I don't want to say blow some steam off, but just to feel better, to feel numb, to not feel the anxiety and the stress and the worry and the sadness and everything that I was feeling inside that I didn't quite understand and I didn't feel safe talking to anybody about. And that's, and as you know, as a teenager, you get older, you face new challenges, new problems, new situations. I started, and you are now becoming older and have much easier access to this kind of material. I started to utilize it more and it became my go-to. In my mid-20s, I ended up getting married and getting the proper mental health diagnosis that I needed for so long. But even that does not negate the addiction. You know, the addiction is a symptom of a deeper problem, and it took me a very long time. Actually, after being arrested was when I finally started working hard with professionals to understand what happened to me as a kid, how I created my survival methods and how I created my coping methods. And while they might have worked as coping methods and survival methods for a five-year-old boy, they weren't the coping methods and survival methods that a 37-year-old man should be using. And that's ultimately, you know, why I ended up where I ended up. And yeah, thank God that it did happen, because it allowed me to get that massive intervention and that massive shakeup in my life that I needed to work with some brilliant people who helped me unlock what was really happening inside of me and helped me see the mental, the physical, the spiritual, the emotional damage and Band-Aids of alcohol and porn that I'd been putting on it for so long. So we needed to rip those Band-Aids off and really find out what was happening there. And you know, I tell people I don't have a giant open festering wound anymore. I just have a scar, but that scar still needs to be taken care of every day.
And that scar is a reminder not to go back.
Absolutely. Like I said, I just passed 4 years. And if you would have told me 6 or 7 years ago that I could ever go 4 years without alcohol or without porn, I would have told you that's only because I died. And had those police officers not come to my house and got the ball rolling for me to enter recovery, I think that the odds are even that I wouldn't even be here with you today, because I probably would have died eventually.
Yeah, or continue along the path where now you stepped over into a territory where now you've become the predator because you are soliciting or engaging with an underage child, an underage person, and now you find yourself in jail. Now, what happens? Okay, so you get the support, but what happens in that time? Is this like court-mandated therapy? What is this?
No. A couple days after I was arrested, I went to visit my lawyer for the first time. I took my father and my wife along, and he asked flat out, do you have any chemical issues, any addictions, anything that might have contributed to your behavior? And I immediately knew that the alcohol played a huge role, because I never got online if I didn't have a giant tumbler of Red Bull and tequila next to me to do this kind of stuff. And my wife immediately looked at me and just said, "You have a drinking problem." And it was the first time she'd ever really said that. She'd expressed that she didn't like my drinking in the past, but it was the first time she ever said that. And I had to look at my lawyer and just say, "I have a drinking problem." He said, "Well, the first thing we're going to do is get you into some treatment." So this was only a few days after I was arrested that I actually went, and I thought, you know, I have a bit of a drinking problem, but I'm not a drunk. It's not really that bad. I'll go to some inpatient treatment, and, you know, just like in the movies, in 28 days, I'll be out and everything will be good. And I'll have a little certificate to show the judge. That 28 days turned into 70 days. And I was, you know, I learned exactly how deep rooted my issues were. After I returned a few months later, I then went to an inpatient facility for sex and porn addiction and learned even more about myself and what was really under there, and to develop the tools to not return to that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's the important piece. Now, your wife recognized that you had a drinking problem. Did she also know about the porn?
She knew that I looked at porn from time to time, but I think she was one of the, she had no idea the extent of it, because she just thought I worked very late into the evenings because I had so much going on professionally. She was one of these people who, she's not morally opposed to pornography existing, or even men looking at it from time to time. But she had no idea just how deep my addiction was and just how sick I was with it.
What did she say when she found out?
Well, I had to call her from the police officer's car as we were driving to the jail and tell her that I'd been arrested and that, you know, they suspected me for talking to somebody who was underage online. When she bailed me out about an hour later, the first thing I said when I got into the car was, listen, if you want to divorce me, I completely understand. No questions asked. I won't put up any roadblocks. I get it. And she looked at me and she said, was it little kids? And I said, no, no, no. It was a teenager. And she said, okay, I know that you looked at a lot of porn. I didn't realize it was this bad. As long as you're not a real pedophile, let's get you the help you need.
Wow. That's huge.
It's huge. And I'm so lucky because I've met, you know, hundreds of men and women at this point who have had similar stories, and the spouse or significant other only probably stays about one out of three times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's so weighty. It's very weighty, and especially with this child involved, there's arrest and all of these things that come. Some people cannot handle the emotional and the psychological stress and the embarrassment that comes with being with someone who's actually been accused of that.
And I was so well known. Like I said, when we drove back from the jail, there was already a TV news van in front of my house.
Sure.
And it was one of those things where it was, it's kind of funny. She had no idea how well known I actually was in the community because she just lives with me. She knew all my little foibles. And there were several times that first night where she and I and the kids had to run into our bedroom to avoid TV cameras. And it's a very surreal situation when you're watching live television news in one room of your house and they're showing the front of your house and you see your dog barking in the window. And it's just like, and that morning, none of this had happened yet. It just turned that quickly.
That quickly.
And without her support, without the support of my kids, without the support of my parents and some of my close family and friends, I would not have made it as far as I did, as quickly as I did.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. And so it's been 4 years and you have been sober as far as alcohol. What about the porn?
It's actually been a little bit longer than, probably about 2 or 3 weeks longer without porn than the alcohol.
That's strictly no porn at all. Not recreational porn, nothing.
Well, I mean, I no recreational, no, you know, professional, no.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's, I do not, if there is a naked person on a movie or something, generally the rule for most people in my situation is if you are watching, you know, a Oscar winning movie and there happens to be some breasts or something like that in it, as long as you're not watching for that specifically, and as long as you're not, you know, mentally honing in on that and obsessing on that, it's okay. Because unlike drugs and alcohol, when it comes to sex addiction or porn addiction, you're going to run into this stuff. You have to actually create a healthy relationship with sexuality. So I don't consider, if I'm, you know, watching something like The Shape of Water and I see breasts in it, that, oh my God, I've just broken my streak of not looking at pornography. It's when I sneak around at night to try to look at it. Mm-hmm. And afterwards I feel really bad about it. And I don't want to tell anybody what I did. That's where the addiction lies. And there hasn't been that for 4 years.
And you've come to that place through with help. You come to that place of strength with help, because many people who are addicted today, this very moment, and are trying and realize that they are addicted, really know that they are, and they cannot stop it on their own. and thinking they can wean themselves off of it is deceptive, because you, ladies and gentlemen, you need help. With any addiction, you have to reach out for help before it's too late. And it's okay to reach out. It's okay to realize you cannot handle it by yourself and that you need the support. Joshua has his family. He had people around him who loved him, who stayed with him, who helped him to get through that difficult period. Because I know an alcoholic cannot just decide to go into a bar and say, okay, I can sit here and watch everybody drink because I'm not thinking about drinking myself. No, you can't go into that bar if you're an alcoholic and you're wanting to be free. You got to go get help. I totally believe that. And I know Joshua does too. So Joshua, you've been able to come to a place of freedom and healing, because it took healing also. We cannot get free of any addiction until we deal with the root cause of the addiction. What drove us there in the first place? You mentioned in our first segment that you had to deal with some stressors that have gone on in your life. We took the journey back to the babysitter and she was perverted. Yeah, she was sick, very sick, but that's not justify her behavior around children or with any other person. So we took that journey, Joshua, and we're bringing it forward to today, where you have been through the recovery and healing and had to deal with the emotional aspect of it. So in speaking to our audience, people who are going through what you have gone through, and first let me ask this question. How do you spot pornography addiction? I get it right. Pornography addiction in an individual. Is there a way to tell?
Like with any addiction, there are ongoing phases of the addiction. When it comes to early warning signs, it's hard to spot in other people because it's one of those things that's, people
behind closed doors.
Out in the front. But if you're talking about, yourself, are you lying about your porn use? Are you keeping secrets about it? Are you covering it up? Do you get angry or irritable if somebody, asks you about your porn use? Are you starting to see sexual dysfunction enter into your real world relationships? Those are all early warning signs that maybe the porn is getting to be too much. And then, as it's ongoing, you start making the promises to yourself, I'll only do this 2 days a week and this won't be that. And you start, making all those little agreements with yourself, but what's actually happening as you're trying to justify it is the escalating amounts of time. And this is where other people can start to recognize red flags. Do you have a boyfriend or a husband or a wife or a sister who seems to be looking at porn more than she ever has before or he ever has before? Are they not, being able to get into long-lasting social and intimate relationships? Do they seem depressed? Is there, shame around everything involving porn? Are they isolating? Are the relationships falling apart with family? Are they not interested in doing things like going to work or school or socializing or exercising? These are all signs that addiction is really coming and being involved. And then when you get to the critical point where I was at the very end, there are things you can see, like financial issues, having massive issues at work or school that, lead to punishments, dismissal. And then the escalation of the kind of porn that's used, mm-hmm. I only went into chat rooms for a few months at the very end, but it was an escalation like any other addiction where I needed it to be more, needed to be more intense, needed to feel more out of it, because like alcohol or drugs or mm-hmm. some other addictions, you build a tolerance.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it can lead to legal issues, mm-hmm. Physical injuries, mm-hmm. Severe mental health issues, mm-hmm. and that's the point where you should be able to recognize it in others.
Yeah. Notice the behavior shifts. Wives can notice it in their husbands, with your wives or even your sons and daughters. Just begin to pay close attention. We cannot ignore this issue. It is an issue of shame and people don't want to talk about it. So Joshua, your book is definitely right on, and dealing and dealing with this and opening the dialogue, the conversations that we need to have, and be transparent about it, because there are so many people that are addicted, and it is causing relationship problems, financial problems, because they're paying these, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, pornography. And people are paying big bucks to have these relationships online, and it's costing them dearly, losing their jobs, actually watching it at work, and, you know, losing their jobs. And we know that the addiction nobody will talk about. We're talking about it today, Joshua. And it is my prayer that someone will hear your voice and hear this conversation and decide to reach out and to get some help in their local market, because there are a number of people who are willing to help. We have people who are addicted to porn from, and it's not, there's no one who's exempt. And I've got to take a pause here in a moment, but there's no group of people who are exempt. Isn't that right, Joshua?
And that's one of the big reasons I wrote my book. I was white collar, professional, very well known in my community, very well respected. I think we have a stereotype of a, you know, 19-year-old pimply faced kid who's never actually kissed a girl in his mom's basement. And that's not who it is. Through my therapy, through my rehabs, I've met every type of person, you know, black, white, Asian, tall, young, old, man, woman, you know, doctor, lawyer, teacher, homeless person. There is no one stereotype for a porn addict. And that's what we need to recognize. It can be anybody. It can be the last person you think. And that's one of the big reasons I wrote the book.
Excellent. It can be anybody, ladies and gentlemen. It could be you.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
It is a real serious issue. My guest today, Joshua Shea, has realized the seriousness of pornography in our society and the great harm that it is doing in the lives of our children and families, and in your life. And he's written a book that I believe addresses this issue in a very sensitive, direct way, The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About, by Joshua Shea. So Joshua, you now have gone through your 4 years of sobriety from alcohol and 4+ years from pornography, and the trauma and the awareness that you came into because you were arrested for soliciting or engaging online with a teenager, someone underage. And so the cops were knocking at your door. I am glad they got you.
And I'm
very glad they got you. And I pray that they get everybody who is participating in sexual misconduct with children, because that raises the hair on my arm when I think about the number of people that are still out there, Joshua, and are not free.
I was told by the district attorney, you know, Josh, probably only 1 in 100 people get caught doing what you're doing. Mm. You just happen to be the one. Mm. And think about that. There were probably, for every one of me, there were probably 99 other people out
there
living this lifestyle, making these same mistakes and these horrible decisions that go completely unchecked.
Yeah, yeah. And you are an upstanding citizen. We talked about in the last segment how it's, you know, no one is exempt. White collar, blue collar, homeless, people who live in mansions, of course. Just no one is exempt. And yet, one out of 100, you said 100 people?
That's what
the DA said to you. One out of 100.
Probably one out of 100 get caught.
One out of 100 get caught. So the 99 that are still out here preying on our children. Joshua, you said something that is so important that people understand, that there's never this satisfaction. There's always this hunger for more. It's like you may start out, if alcohol, you may start out with beer or wine. And then if you drink so much, I spoke to someone the other day, and they were telling me about the drinking, and they were being very honest with me, which I need people to do so that I can assist them in any way that I can. But 8 beers a day is not going to satisfy you. It's pretty soon you're going to go to, what's the next harsh drink? I guess that would be like whiskey or something.
I don't know. I mean, I went from beer to tequila, and because I just couldn't. You reach a point where you can't drink a certain amount of liquid. So I need the alcohol to be of a higher potency, and tequila did it for me. And I don't know what proof it was, but I knew that I could drink it and always have room for more. The problem with the beer was I didn't always have room for more, yet I hadn't hit that place that I needed the alcohol to take me. So it escalated up to tequila.
And porn addiction is the same way. Pulls you more, or any addiction, and you want more and more and more. And you mentioned that it can cause death, people get hurt, you ruin relationships, financial distress, a lot of things happen. So it's nothing that we should take lightly. And because you were arrested, you did serve your time. I want people to know that you did serve your time, 6 months in jail, and this was just a few years ago.
Right.
And you sought help and treatment through one-on-one therapy. You went through group therapy and inpatient rehab. You went through that type of therapy, and you've also been sober. So you come back, you went to hell, but you came back with some keys. You came back with a message. You came back with a song in your heart to say, you know what? That's a way that people have chosen to take, but that's not, there is a way out of it. And that's the good news about this. There is a way out of it, ladies and gentlemen. You may be addicted, but you don't have to stay addicted. Talk to us, Joshua, about the addiction nobody will talk about.
Well, and that's, you know, and the other big reason that I wrote the book, along with showing that there's no stereotypical addict, is for the people who might be an ongoing addict and hiding it very well. I wrote this for them to be almost a mirror to say, hey, take care of this, because if you don't, it can escalate and it can get to some very sinister areas. You know, I take full responsibility for making the decision to pull myself off of my meds. It was stupid. It was wrong. I take full responsibility for interacting with that teenage girl online. That was stupid. That was wrong. But that's how sick I became. That's how sick I allowed myself to become. And not taking care of myself, it's not like I set out 3 months before I got arrested to end up there. It's just progressive, and it's an illness, and it gets progressively worse. And if you're at a place, like so many people are, where you think that you might have an issue with pornography, I promise you, if you think you have an issue, you do. And get help now before it escalates. The numbers are scary. Right now, according to the Barna Group, one-third of men between 18 and 30 think that they're addicted to or are unsure if they're addicted to pornography. Now imagine that. One out of every three men under 30 years old may be addicted to pornography. If we don't take care of this, those men are going to be soon just under 40, and then just under 50, and then just under 60. And within 20 or 30 years, you tell me what this country looks like when one out of every two or one out of every three men is addicted to pornography, because that's actually where we're headed if we don't start dealing with this now. And we can't ignore it the way we ignored the opiate crisis back in the 70s and 80s, because the people who used opiates were all dirty, homeless people. So let's not deal with them. Well, we found out we're wrong. The people who use opiates are everybody we know, just like the people who use pornography are everybody we know. And instead of being a reactive society too late, we need to be a proactive society now. Start talking about pornography with our kids and just as a society in general.
Amen, brother. That's good. That is excellent. As you were talking, Joshua, I thought about all of the media, the news that we've had over the last few years, people in politics, people in religion that are being accused of violating sexual violations, and all of this news. It's like we're in a society right now, not like we are. We are in a society right now. Well, it is a craze. There's possession. People are just losing their very minds and becoming so sexually immoral. And I believe a lot of it is because the lack of education.
Absolutely.
We don't have enough education in the West. And because it has been so taboo to talk about it, and we've not set our sons and daughters down and had intelligent conversations with them, we've not allowed the schools to really touch the subject because we want the parents to handle it, and the parents are not doing it. And you can't give away what you don't possess. If parents have not been educated, how can they pass that on to their children? So Joshua, this book that you've written is a good attempt to begin to educate people about the pornography industry and how to keep the children safe and how to free yourself of this addiction. Go ahead, Joshua.
Absolutely. And I don't want people to pick up the book thinking this is a step-by-step how-to to get away from porn addiction. What it really serves more is my story showing you how this happens in real time. You know, there are places you can go and read about, you know, the clinical side of this addiction. But I think that allows so many people to put up a wall between themselves and what it really is. And with this book, I'm trying to show you, here is just an average guy, or maybe even the guy you wouldn't think would be into this, because everybody, you know, he was so well known in his community, how I can succumb to it, how I can look back now analyzing my life, both then and early on, and see the red flags. And by illustrating this through my story, and the way that I learn is by doing things and by hearing stories, not necessarily numbers and statistics, I wanted to create a book that somebody who maybe just wants to dip their toe into the pool to learn about porn addiction, this is their entry to it, because we just need to crack open the door right now. I'm not trying to kick this door open and say, okay, we need to have next year, mandated pornography education in schools, because I know that's not going to happen. Let's just open the door a little bit right now. And if we can go bit by bit, that's going to be the best way to go to get to a healthy society, because so many people aren't ready. We need to ease into this, similar to, you know, something like, same-sex marriage, where that took decades and decades to happen. It was a slow move in that direction. We need to start moving in that direction, because right now we're standing still.
We have to include some parental guidance and controls over the internet within your own home. And parents, and Malcolm, the CEO of the network, says this so many times in almost every show we do about these issues, is parents have a responsibility, and we got to get parents to be parents again. And that's going to take a lot of education from both sides, from the school side, as well as the churches being involved and giving parenting classes. I mean, I remember those classes used to be around, and now you don't even hear about them anymore.
No, and I tell you, you can start very simple. teach your kids to look both ways before they cross the street. You teach them at a young age, don't drink alcohol or don't get in cars with strangers. You know, don't look at pictures of naked people can simply be added to that list. Kids want direction. Kids want to know the difference between right and wrong. If you have a kid that you have to be putting locks all over their computers and phones at 16 years old, you know, I hate to say this, but the problem's already there. You need to start dealing with the root of the problem. If you can go back 10 years and deal with your 5- and 6-year-olds, you can start to plant those seeds where, you know, it's not a difficult conversation because they don't really understand what pornography is. It's just one of those things where when you create a safe space, when you create a judgment-free space, that your children can adapt and learn. Just as your kids probably don't use drugs or probably don't get in cars with strangers, as the vast majority don't, well, all you have to do is start introducing this at a young age as something to be concerned about too. And don't make the biggest deal in the world out of it when they're 5 or 6. Just include it that way. And I have a feeling we're going to go a long way as a country if parents would just drop a few of those little nuggets in now and then.
Yeah, teach them about boundaries and safe spaces, you know, without them having the same mindset or culture mindset of that all sex is bad and the body is ugly and you don't look at that, that's a bad thing. But proper education and introduction and talking about safe boundaries, what's a safe touch, what's not a safe touch, those type of things is what we teach our younger children. And so that as they grow up, they already have these boundaries in place mentally, emotionally, and they will know the rights and wrong spaces and places. So Joshua, thank you so much for bringing that out. I want us to end this segment on a note where we're giving our audience not only where they can have access to your book, but a little bit more. I know you said that it's not a how-to manual and you talk about your journey and how you have recovered. But give them a little bit more about how to deal with the triggers. Perhaps there's someone who's listening and they have also been, they've gone through some of the therapies and some of the healing process, but they still are having temptations and triggers. How do you manage those?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, you don't manage them on your own if you feel like you're not able to. I would urge people to look at my website, recoveringpornaddict.com. There's a section that has a lot of resources on it about where you can go. There, you know, maybe what you need to do is write about it. There are thousands of people who maintain blogs talking about their issues, and that's how they get it out of there. There are a lot of people who join 12-step groups like a Sex Addicts Anonymous. There are people who continue in one-on-one therapy for the rest of their life talking about this. There's a lot of resources out there. You just have to go find them. They're not hiding. There's a great community out there that wants to help you with this. It's just that it's a bit of an underground community right now. And if we can bring that more to the forefront, you know, here's a statistic. As I mentioned, I didn't like statistics, but here's a statistic that'll blow your mind. In the United States, there are 62,000 AA groups. There are only 1,500 Sex Addicts Anonymous groups. That's a 60-to-1 ratio. We need to get more people talking about this. Resources out there. And if you need help and get out there and start telling your story or start getting help, you're going to help other people. And I can tell you personally, as somebody who was a selfish bastard for most of my life, what I'm doing now feels so much better because it's not about me. It's about helping other people by telling my story. And if you have some issues, tell some other people about it. Get the help you need. One of the best things I've ever done for recovery is come on shows like this and talk about this. Because this just, you know, boldface and underlines and italicizes everything that I'm doing and I believe. And I can tell you that if you take that same route and, you know, I still have shame. I still have embarrassment. I always will. But I'm trying to use that for some good. And I think that if other people try doing this as well, we're going to see a big improvement in our country and how we look at pornography, the problems we have with pornography, and how we treat it moving forward.
Yeah, that is excellent. So how do we get a copy of your book, Joshua?
You can go to, you know, Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. If you want to make it easy, just go to my website. There are links right there. Again, it's recoveringpornaddict.com. You'll see the links right on the homepage.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, from my guest today, Joshua Shea, a recovered porn addict. And he has been so transparent with us today. Joshua, thank you so much for sharing your soul with us about the addiction nobody will talk about, but you were able to talk about it here today on the Energy Bar. We appreciate that so much.
And thank you so much for giving me the time to do this. I appreciate that more than you know.
Well, it's a blessing. Ladies and gentlemen, and on a final note, I want to share this with you, those of you who are listening, because we've taken our time to walk through this serious issue here today, pornography. It's not going away, so we have to face it intelligently. Internet pornography, it is the first internet safety topic that made the news. And it has not been in the news as much as it was in the past, when so many sexual predators were spotted online and there were television shows bringing light to this issue. They seem to have taken a back seat to the drama in Washington, D.C. I'm encouraging each of us to not get distracted by the mass media and politics, to keep our family as number one, to focus in on our homes and our children. After all, this is a nation that is built on government for the people and by the people. It is up to us to raise our children. It's up to us to be a light in our communities and around the world at large. Until next time, I'm Dr. Faye. Thank you so much for joining me for another Energy Bar. Kisses and hugs. God bless you now.